Okay, so now we're in chapter 5, and we're in the web app framework, and as always, this is copyright Creative Commons attributions, including this audio. And so part of what the whole book goes through is the HTTP request response cycle. And, you know, at chapters, you know, 1 and 2 and 3 kind of go over what we do in terms of presentation and CSS and HTML. Talk a little bit about JavaScript in a later chapter. But in this chapter, we're going to be using Python and building a web application. And it's the first chapter we really kind of get deeply into how we write code inside the server. So a request goes in, we write the code, that's what we're going to do now, and then the request goes back to our browser. Thank you very much. So if any of you have written sort of PHP applications or raw Java applications, you're familiar with sort of all these variables that come in, the post data, the server data, and in the earlier chapters I show examples of how you can actually talk to the raw HTTP data, if that's what you want. It's not the most efficient way. And the problem is if you were going to talk to the raw CGI level, you'd have to figure out how to parse multi-part form data, and that's just, life is too short for that. So the web app framework, which is called WSGI in the Python world, is just like HTTPD in the Apache world and Tomcat in the Java world. It is that thing that knows all the rules of HTTP. It parses things. It knows all the headers. It knows what the protocol is supposed to do. So you don't have to write that code. But then you have to sort of live in its world. And so we'll talk about this. So, and now, at this point, let me grab a copy. Where are the rest of the handouts? So the first thing on the handout is what we're going to talk about now, this chapter 5 thing. So you can pull it up. The handout is most useful if you don't want to look at the source code on an editor, but you can. So what I want to do is I want to call your attention to the bottom part. I'll call your attention to the bottom part. And so this is a pattern in Python. How many people have done Python? Okay, about a third. So Python's a really awesome language. Let's give a 30-second introduction to Python. Python uses indentation as a critical element, so it doesn't have begin-end. You have if statements, have colons on them, and then you indent. And when you're done with the if statement, you de-indent. That's pretty much all you need to know if you know any other programming language. Python is a really cool language, and it was aimed at children. In the early 80s, it was built for children, kind of like Logo and those child languages. And I like it because it's dense and powerful things happen quickly in it, and you don't have to write too much code. So if we take a look at if we take a look at this whole thing, I guess I should probably just bring up some code here so I can point at it. So this is what you're looking at right now. So let me give you a rough overview of what you're looking at. So at the beginning, we are these import statements. Oops, come back. These import statements pull in library code that Google provides for us. Then, and I'll show you what this is doing, but in effect, we are defining some code that is on the receiving end of all the incoming web requests. And that's this main handler. And this is just a string. And then we have a get method, which is when the framework receives a get, it runs this code. Then we have a post method. And when the framework receives a post, we receive this code. And then we have a main that starts it up. So that's the basic outline. Let me go ahead and run this program. So this one is AEO3 web app. And I'm going to start it. Browse it. And this is what it looks like. So this is a guessing game. And the answer to this one is not secret, but it is a similarly important number. A guess of 23 is too low. A guess of 100 is too high. A guess of 43 is too high. And a guess of 41 is too low. So, of course, we know what the right answer is. So as we look at this code, the basic idea is the main code, def main, is the main code that's going to run to start it all up. And what it's doing is it's defining some routing. It's defining some routing as to when you see a URL of a particular form. And so that slash dot asterisk is really saying all the URLs that you see, send them to main handler. So main handler is a bit of code. So what is a handler? Well, this WSGI is a framework. And it's taking care of a whole bunch of problems. And it's going to call us back. It uses the callback pattern. And so the way a framework sort of works is we sort of set things up at the beginning. And that's the code that's happening down here in the bottom at the main. Is we're saying, hey, when you see a request, get or a post that has a slash at the beginning and any set of characters following it, please route that to main handler. And so after we set things up, our program kind of goes to sleep at that point and waits for requests to come back. And when requests come in, the requests go straight to us. And so that's how it works, right? So when we click on something, the framework already has knows to route to our main handler code, which is this top bit of the code, and says, well, if there's a get, do this, and if there's a post, do that. Now you say, well, why do we go through all this fuss? Well, in the Google world, if your application gets really busy, they just whip up more of these handlers. And they might whip these handlers up on different computers. If one handler gets done with the request, it routes it. So one of the cool things about the handlers is that they are running as a single thread. There's no multi-threading you have to worry about. You've got one handler. The handler handles things. And for the moment, while you're using that for one, if there's many requests that come in, it makes many copies of the handler. So that's why we do this thing where we start the framework up and we tell it, make as many of these handlers as you like. It's object-oriented, so it creates this handler object and then sets things up. Okay, now there's another file to take a look at. It's the file app.yaml. So let me show you the app.yaml file. So in every one of these, there's this file app.yaml. Now this is the file that, yeah?
How can I run the launcher on Linux?
I don't know if there's even a launcher on Linux.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but you figure out how to do the dev app server PY?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think there's a launcher. There wasn't even a launcher on Windows until like 4 months ago. It was only on Macintosh for a long time.
Where do you need to put and move the applications to actually see them in the app server?
What's that?
Where do you need to move the applications to see
them
in the app server?
So what you want to do is you want to make dev_appserver.py in your path. Right, so you get that dev_appserver.py in your path. And then I move into the folder just above the app and then start it. So let me show you that again, now that we're back to this. So
in the folder above the apps?
Well, not in the folder that is called apps in this particular situation. So I go to desktop, CD workshop, CD apps. So now I've got all these guys. Then I get dev_appserver.py in my path. So I've got it in my path somewhere. I could put that in user local or any number of places. The Mac installer makes symlinks to user local so that you could type this. And you could actually even type the whole long path of devappserver.py, right, at this point. And then you give AE, which one am I using right now? 03 web app. So that's how I started. And then I blow it up with a control C, and then I start a different one. And that's how I can start one and kill it and start it and kill it and start it and kill it. Okay? Yeah?
This may be a very silly question, but I've done that guessing application. It works, but all the code is locally on my PC. I don't really see where the cloud is coming into this.
Oh, yeah, you're just emulating cloud right now. So, and we won't even probably do the cloud. I'll show you a little demo of upload. It's really simple. See this deploy button?
Yeah.
That puts it in the cloud.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so, okay.
Okay? And so, for example, this is that little learning application. And I can run it locally. And when I want to upload a new version, I hit the deploy button. Now, you have to do some setup, right? Did you buy a book?
I will do. Have you got one?
No, I gave them all away. Maybe you can borrow one and look at chapter 10. So if you look at chapter 10, or you can borrow someone nearby and look at, it's chapter 10, I think, that is the how to put it up. So the book goes all the way through putting it up. As a matter of fact, we've got slides for chapter 10, so you got free slides for chapter 10,
yeah.
So you can look through it. The bottom line is, you got to go, you sign up, you get kind of a key, you got to pick a name. So for example, everyone gets a unique name on the cloud. AE12AJAX.appspot.com, I think, is one of mine. Let's see if the network's working. But you're absolutely right. That was a super question, because you're right. We're nowhere near the cloud. We're just like developing locally for now. http://AE12AJAX.appspot.com. Ah! Oops. Who was it that tweeted about the fact that they could print these in bigger fonts, and a font that L1 and I doesn't look the same? And why not just not use L1 or I if you're going to make a font that includes, oh, rah. Yeah, that which is quite valuable in terms of stealing Wi-Fi at Dev8 if you don't already have it yourself. Although I have changed all my personal accounts to this password because it's such an awesome password. There we go. Okay, so now we'll do cloud. And you can actually go to this. So this is AE12 AppSpot. I'll stop this one and I'll start this one. This is a little AJAX chat. Now, don't kill it too bad. You might use up all my gigabyte of transfer if you go too crazy on it. But, I mean, I can run this locally, right? And that's running locally. And if I hit the deploy button, oops, if I hit this one, so I hit the deploy button. Oh, that is my Google account, and I reserved AE12 AJAX, so you can't have AE12 AJAX on the cloud. You got to pick these. You got to change these names to something you get. They're like domain names. So what it's doing? Oop! Here's the log. It is. Oh crap! It's one of my other ones. Okay, let me deploy a different one. I have a couple of accounts. Who owns this one? Does Dr. Chuck own that one? Yeah. Okay. So now it's making copies of the things I've done, and it just uploaded that. Right? Okay. Now I can actually go to, this one's called AE-Learn. So that happens to be my App Engine learn site that I'm using App Engine to serve that site. And so that is running on Google now. Now, if you fiddle with it and you use Google Sites and stuff like that, you can get vanity domain names. And I've got a vanity domain name for this, which is the same site, but now behind a vanity domain name. But that's coming from Google. And I just updated that site that was sitting on my local drive, and I could test it and develop locally. Then I deploy it. And then I'll show you one other thing just for yucks. I will show you the dashboard you get running in the cloud. So if something goes wrong and you want to see what's going on, so if you guys are all going, well, to this one. So everyone go beat on appenginelearn.com and hit refresh a bunch of times. So these are all my apps. These are the ones that I own, and you get like 10 for every Google account. You get 10 apps.
Free.
What?
It's free.
Free, yeah. But I got like 3 Google accounts, so I got 30 apps. So you see, you're beating it up now. So let me hit refresh and see if our usage is going up. Yeah, so we're hitting on it. And so we can see how much I've used so far. This is my 24-hour quota. And I'm still at 0%. Let's see if we're getting any excitement here. Yeah. So I got 0.1% of my CPU hours used up for today. So we can see, let me see if any of my other sites are getting any action. Probably not. And none of these are really that. Cloud Collab maybe has some action. No action. This is the cool thing about it, is if you have a bunch of sites that aren't getting a lot of action, you just put them up there and leave them up there. And when they get some action, Google springs into action, up they go. So that's going on to the cloud. So the cloud is basically one click away. And this is one of the things that they said when they introduced it, is like, you don't have to FTP, you don't have to do nothing, you just like get a name and you stick it up there and it just runs and you just click and click and click. The one thing I wish they did was did source code maintenance, but they don't do that. There's no version tracking that's automatic, which they should do, but they don't have that. Okay? So that's the cloud. But what we're doing here is just sort of hacking locally. Okay, so where was I? But thank you for asking that question, and don't hesitate to ask questions anytime. Oh, I was going to show you the app YAML file. But your timing was perfect on app YAML, because it explains one of the somewhat unexplained things in app YAML. So app YAML is this little file that is kind of like the web XML in a Java application. And so what it does is it names the application. And you'll notice that mine are all named the same as the folder. But once you register one in the cloud, you've got to change your name to be the one that belongs to you. So that's the one that's going to be uploaded into the cloud. On your desktop, you can have any name you want. But when you upload it in the cloud, that must match one that you have reserved as yours. And it's like domain names, whoever gets there first, because all the good ones are gone. Right? Dr. Chuck is already gone. I don't get that one. And then we're telling it that we're running the first version and we're running Python. And then it tells it basically, for all URLs, run the script index.py. So you'll see as we go on, these app YAMLs will get a little more complex. And then this index.py is the code that runs effectively on every request. Okay? So I bet I have slides coming up that sort of are to that effect. So the app YAML routes the various requests among multiple Python scripts. In this example, I've only got one Python script, but you could, in this file, route different kinds of requests to different scripts, and actually can route them to static areas, and we'll get to that as we get towards templates. So there's two layers of routing in a Google App Engine application. One layer is App YAML, which picks which script, and then within the web app, you have multiple handlers. Now, the AppYAML sort of wins, because if the URL never makes it to one of the scripts, then you can't route it inside the script. So let's take a look at a handler. So the basic idea of a handler is it's a bit of code, it's a class, and in Python lingo, for those of us who are object-oriented, we are creating a new class called PointlessHandler, and we're extending a class called WebApp.requestHandler. So in the Java terms, this is extending, which means we're really just inheriting a whole lot of functionality that we don't have to write. And the two methods that we have to write, in a sense, to override is a get method and a post method. And I'm just going to put out a log message. So these are kind of stupid, because it's not even going to give us any output, because we're not generating output. But when a get message comes in, it would come in here, and then the output would come out. If a post message would come in here. So we kind of have this layer of abstraction that basically says, post messages arrive here on our front doorstep. Get messages arrive there on their front doorstep. So logging is an important part of any web application, and there's a whole logging system. And because of the fact that your users will not generally call you and send you screenshots when your application breaks, you need to add logging to your application. And so the logging looks like this. So I'll show you where to go find your logs. Let's tighten that up. That's the best we get. Okay, so I'll show you where to go find your logs. Your logs are right here under this button that says logs. So I guess I should probably run something. Let's go ahead and run this one. Cancel. I'll run that one. And then I'll browse it. And here we are. And then I'll watch the log. So here's the log. And this is kind of like the Matrix. It looks like crap for a while, but then after a while it starts making sense to you. Okay? You just got to get used to it. And so it's basically telling us that we got a get request. And so now I'm going to hit a post and you'll watch the log. I'll do a post. I'll just guess 42 as a random number in this guessing game. And so this said that I did a post, and this actually is a log message from my program itself, okay? So I put a log message in line 18 of index.py. And so it's a way for you to put debugging without having to send it out to the browser. So if we take a quick look at the application, if the application does a get or receives a get, which in this case would be if the URL is simply entered, it prints out the string good luck and then prints out this form. So it says good luck in a form. A post is, of course, when we type the submit button, and then that parameter shows up, comes into post, self-request get. Self is kind of Python's equivalent of this for those of us in Java land. And request is the incoming data, and get is get me one of the parameters and give me the name guess. And if we take a look at the HTML, of course, the HTML here is a form. And the name of this particular input parameter is guess. And so that form, which is this form, that says 42 is coming in as the parameter guess. So this is going to be a string representation of 42, and then we're going to parse that, try to parse it, and then we're going to put out a message, and then we're going to call a write to send back the data. So if I run that again, and I actually print it, oh, wait, and then there's a logging. Oh, see here this log statement? So there's a log statement. So as soon as I parse the guess, I log it. So I hit submit, and son of a gun, if that log message came from this line. So that log message and this line are the same thing.
How do we see the log?
Yep, You see the log by going to your app console. So if you're in Linux, you always have to prefix, I'm a Linux person, because then you get a very, you know, yucky answer, right? Now, if you're in Linux, it's coming right up on the terminal all the time. If you're in the launcher, it's here. It's right there. So I actually, that one I actually prefer. You know, funny, I teach my class to use the command line because, you know, it's, after you get used to it, it's quick. I tend to use the command line myself. But I'm kind of a Linux guy that doesn't maintain my own kernel. That's why I have an Apple. So, okay, did I get that question about the logs? So it's either there or it's just sitting in here cruising by if you're a Linux slash command line type. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so let's continue on and see how these slides take us. Oh, so the log when you're on a running system is particularly cool as well. So let's see if my credentials have expired. I can actually go and go look at AE12 AJAX, and I can go back to its dashboard. What? Oh, I don't own AE12 AJAX, sorry. That's because I went and got some other Google accounts so that I could get more app engines. So I have like three of them. Because I ran out, partly because I was screwing up. So this is my console up on this AE Learn application, and I can look at the logs. Same code, but the logs look quite different because they sort them. And so I'm just looking at error logs, and this app is rocking out because it's got no errors. I can look at info logs, and you know you can see, oh, I guess I got some warnings here. What the heck is the static file? Huh. I don't know what that's doing. Static file reference not found. I don't know what that means. But I don't care. These are warning messages. This is on my running system. Oh, I know what this is. I know what this is. In the old days, I secretly had all the chapters of my book sneaked up here on a URL that a search engine found out about, and then I had to go kill them. But the search engine still knows where they were. And so it just is ever hopeful that I will put them back up. That's what's going on here. See, it says chapters, something, something, something. There probably, if you go look far enough, you will see that it is a search engine that's hoping that I will make a mistake and put the chapters back up. It was the most used site, piece of the site, sadly. But I just didn't want O'Reilly to hate me too badly. Okay, so let's go back to the slides, see what the slides have to say. You get errors in the log. You haven't had any yet because you're just using my code. Let's see. Log errors, you saw that. As in the Matrix, it looks like crap for a while, but it looks beautiful after you get used to it. I already said that. We're going to skip that part. We're going to skip this part. CGI style programming. Don't need that. Skip that. Okay. So now we're going to do this. Wait a sec. Do I already have this? Okay. I already talked about that. Okay. So the key bits to this part right here is to get used to this first page and the notion that this junk at the bottom main is routing. The class stuff is when gets happen, they go to the get method. When posts happen, they go to the post method. And there's these things logs. And the self-response outright is how you write back to the browser. That's kind of the big thing for this little chapter 5. Okay? Any questions? Okay. Should we take a quick break? Let's take a 10-minute break and then come back. And then we'll go to chapter, I think, 8. Or, yeah.